You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
This is MLB.com Extras, Milwaukee Brewers edition. I'm Anthony Kashmich, joined by Adam McKelvey, MLB.com's beat writer for the Brew Crew. And Milwaukee remains, obviously on top of that NL Central. That's still a very tight division and an interesting division. It gets more interesting by the day. St. Louis obviously did a lot at the trade deadline. The Pirates are dealing with the absence of Andrew McCutchen. The Reds have some injuries of their own. And now you add an interesting Brewers injury into the mix as well with the loss of Matt Garza. Bringing Adam to talk about that. Adam, this is really the first time this rotation has been tested by injury this season. It's obviously something that Garza himself has dealt with in the past. What's your read on the injury, and is it just a nagging thing? Is it something to be of more lingering concern to them? What's your take on that?
Well, I think any time the word oblique is involved, whether it's a pitcher or a position player, it's a huge red flag and something to be concerned about, because I've yet to see the oblique that lingers a couple of days and then goes away. It's one of those things that a player typically deals with for a long period of time. And, there's different levels of severity, and Garza has been clear that this one feels a lot different than what he suffered in spring training with the Cubs last year when he didn't make a start for them until I think it was the third week in May.
Right.
That was more in his back. It was actually labeled in his media guide bio as a lat injury, so it was more in the back. And he thinks that was a lot worse. So you kind of go on by what he says. The Brewers obviously want to get him back as quickly as possible. And the thing now you see in clubhouses is all this electrical stuff that they do with players. You see guys with these big bruises on their back, and you see him sitting in the clubhouse with muscles twitching involuntarily. It's all really bizarre. And I think that type of treatment now that's become really popular helps, especially for these intercostals, because it's a muscle that's hard to get at, and it's hard to work out and stimulate that area. And they use these diodes or whatever to get in there and get blood to those muscles. I think that's going to help him. So perhaps they're getting better at treating these injuries. And I know the Brewers are going to be very aggressive with it, because he's, beyond being their big money guy, he'd been pitching great. And it's a big loss for the rotation.
It's funny you mention that. I mean, I remember first time I saw that was Masa Kobayashi, this obscure reliever the Indians brought in from Japan. This must have been about 6 or 7 years ago. And, he had those marks on his back. And those of us on the beat crew were looking at each other like, what are those hickeys? What is this thing? And now you see him everywhere. It's kind of standard operation.
Literally everywhere. I think literally every guy, at least on the Milwaukee team, has one somewhere that he gets treatment for. It's a cupping, they call it, or then there's a different thing that's H-wave. That's the really weird one. You see that with the relief pitchers a lot, where a lot of guys are going away from icing, which is interesting. Mm-hmm. You never see them with a pack of ice on their arm, but instead they want to get blood flowing to their muscles, so they attach this thing to their bicep or tricep or shoulder, wherever. And then they're sitting there talking to you after, again, you're conducting a post-game interview while their bicep is flexing involuntarily. And it's really distracting. And, you always kind of want to get away from the guy. You think he's going to just jump up and start swinging. But it's all about, it's all about getting blood to that area, maximizing recovery, and the amount of those guys can spend out on the mound or in the field.
Yeah. Well, the Brewers now, and Mike Vollman pointed this out in a column for MLB.com, is that the Brewers now have some homegrown blood flowing through their rotation these days, a lot more than in years past. Willie Peralta, the way he's developed, obviously Gallardo. We'll see if Marco Estrada or Mike Fiers, end up the guy to replace Garza in the rotation for the time being. But I want to talk to you a little bit more about Jimmy Nelson, who's made three straight quality starts now at this point. You're starting to see, him put it together at the major league level a little bit. I know his control is not quite what it could be or what they want it to be, but what's been your read on his progression here the last month or so?
Well, the more you see him, the more he reminds you, at least in terms of his pitching style, of Willy Peralta, the other young homegrown right-hander they have in the rotation. It took Peralta a while. This year really in the second half last year, he started to find a streak of quality starts, and he's continued it this year. When he won his last game, he was tied with Kershaw, Scherzer, and Adam Wainwright for the major league lead in victories. And I know we're not going to base everything on victories. We're smarter than that. But it shows you that he's pitching well enough to put himself in position to win ballgames. Jimmy Nelson, very similar, 95, 96, heavy sink on the fastball, command issues at times. Him and Peralta were similar enough that the Brewers wanted to break them up in the rotation. They'd been pitching back-to-back, and a blister on one of Nelson's fingers gave him an opportunity to do that, and with off days, it didn't screw up the rest of the rotation. And obviously, he looked unaffected by it in his first start back from that. So quality arm, and if his progression is like Willy Peralta's, it's going to take him a little while at the big league level to get into a streak where he trusts that fastball. His secondary stuff he's got to work on, just like Willy Peralta did. But he has the makings of a good pitcher. You read doubt about him. He's the Brewers' number one prospect and put up these big numbers at AAA. But you read from some scouts and the prospect websites that he's more of a middle to back end starter. And then you see the stuff and you think the potential is there for him to be more than that. So it's up to him to sort of pitch to what, show us what he's going to be.
Yeah, I mean, I'd imagine Loesch is their number one in a postseason scenario right now, but you do have to wonder if this Garza thing lingers, who kind of steps into that forefront. Obviously, Nelson is a prime candidate. Him and Peralta, they got such good movement on their pitches. So, again, if he finds that control on a consistent basis, so just an interesting guy to watch here next couple months. But another interesting guy to watch is Gerardo Parra, who, the Brewers, we didn't quite know what they were going to do going into the deadline. I know there's a lot of talk about potentially adding some relief help, maybe add a bat, but it seemed like that was a little more doubtful. It turned out they did add a bat, and it's a guy who's known more for his glove than his bat. But Parra, in his first home game with the Brewers, hits the go-ahead home run, shows off that slick glove of his with a nice diving catch. How and why did this deal come together for Parra, Adam?
Well, they are very right-handed on their team in general. And their fourth outfielder was Logan Schaefer, a guy who came up through the system. Great tools, really good defensive player. And when he played regularly in spring training, looked like he could really hit. He just never got comfortable in that fourth outfielder, inconsistent at bats, pinch hitting role. And he was not productive at all offensively. So, the opportunity to add a guy with a lot more experience in inconsistent play and bouncing around different positions came up when the Brewers started talking with the Diamondbacks, and it cost them a player that they like, Mitch Haniger, a really professional hitter, advanced guy when they drafted him, was moving quickly. A couple injury issues set him back a little bit, but they really like him. But they did feel like Parra gave him a much more experience coming off the bench, a guy who's proven he can handle that really difficult role. And then insurance, because, we've talked a lot about Ryan Braun being banged up. Carlos Gomez has dealt with back problems, and just his style of play kind of makes him you worry about injuries if you're Doug Melvin, the general manager. So Parra gives him insurance, a guy that if a player is to miss significant time, you've got a real big leaguer to put in that spot, and I think that's why it was attractive. And speaking of relievers, they work really hard to get a reliever. That was their priority, not the bat. But the asks were just astronomical. Ron Renneke sat in on some of those morning meetings the week of the trade deadline, and teams for a reliever were asking for Jimmy Nelson, the Brewers' top prospect, a guy who, whether or not he's going to be a number one pitcher, is going to be a part of that rotation for the next 6 years. And to trade 6 years of a guy you think has a chance to be a quality starting pitcher for, either 2 months of a reliever or 2 months plus next season of a reliever, it was just not something the Brewers were willing to do. And they also weren't willing to trade one of their other homegrown hitters. A guy like Scooter Jeanette was asked about, Chris Davis, the left fielder, was asked about. And the Brewers were sort of, taken aback by the high asking price. So they're continuing to work at it. And, you know, some of the guys they looked at would look really good on this team because that bullpen could use some right-handed help on the back end. Guys like Koji Uehara, the Brewers tried on. Benoit in San Diego, they tried really hard to get. A couple of players, Addison Reed and Brad Ziegler in Arizona. But just was not a deal to be made at the deadline. We'll see whether, you know, August is the time you can still get relievers. We'll see if they're able to pull something off.
Yeah, as Melvin has pointed out many times, you're talking about maybe you get 8 innings out of a guy in a given month, and that's a lot. That's an area to definitely throw good money or in this case, good prospects at a potentially bad situation. So I understand
your
restraint there.
And, Anthony, you don't necessarily blame the other teams for making that ask because deals that have been done for relief. And, you know, Houston Street, the cost that the Angels gave up to get Houston Street, it was really high. It was 3 really good players, including a player some considered their top prospect. So, you know, this time of year, every good team probably needs bullpen help. It's a hot commodity. And owners and general managers get in the situation where they're willing to stretch to fill that need. But again, the ask was just not an area. The Brewers kind of had names of the types of prospects that they were willing to give up, and they felt like they were fair in the guys they were choosing. And the proposals would come in. It was just way above and beyond that, and they weren't willing to do it.
Well, they already got a nice return out of Parra, that his first home game there at Miller Park on Tuesday night, and really was the star of the game for him. And every little bit helps because that NL Central is as tight as they come. So I want to thank Adam McKelvey for joining us to talk about it. I'm Anthony Cashman. This has been MLB.com Extras, Milwaukee Brewers.